is Cascadia Public Radio.
America, welcome to our show today. It is Wednesday, March 7th, 2012, hump day, middle of the weekday, starting that long, slow glide down to Powhana Friday and another hopefully relaxing weekend here. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. As usual, Dan is in the control room. Dan, the man, is in there twiddling the dials, answering the phone, and keeping us out of trouble. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. The donations phone number is still open. It's still open for business, ready to take your calls for donations to the Republic Broadcasting Network. That number is 800-724-2719. And I'd like to start off, first of all, by thanking and congratulating all the people who called in during yesterday's show. We made a significant impact, and it was noticed. And I just felt I wanted to say thank you for, everybody to, for what they're doing here. Now, I have to be careful, of course, because it really is beneath our dignity. And it's actually a serious violation of my contract with Republic Broadcasting to suggest or imply that the listeners of my show are more generous or more concerned about the future of our nation than the listeners of any other RBN show, even though we know that you actually are. And I certainly don't want to get into a childish and infantile donations contest with the other hosts. However, if you're watching on Justin TV, you will notice that we have this new banner for our radio show, What Really Happened, and it was sent in by one of our listeners, one of our regular readers, and it's a thank you very much. It was a wonderful gift. Obviously, with that on the wall, we no longer have room for the mace or for the V for Vendetta's masks. So what we're going to do today, we're going to do something a little bit different here, and that is the largest donor that calls in to donate to RBN during my show today. The highest donor gets the V for Vendetta mask, and once again, Claire and I will sign it. We're already on our way to the post office mailing out all the CDs that were donated for yesterday. So we're gonna try and come up with little things to keep this interesting and down the road. Who knows? I might even send out the mace if I can figure out some way that I can do this without having Homeland Security kick down your door after you receive the item. Maybe even the Gadsden flag. I still haven't decided, but I'm keeping my dinosaur and obviously the picture of my wife. So we're moving on to the show here, and again, all kidding aside, the reality is that RBN really does need your support in order to buy new equipment, to expand our audience, to reach more people during this very, very difficult time. I mean, look how much money AIPAC has to spend, most of which they actually get, from Congress. Congress sends money to Israel. Israel sends money back. They use it to bribe more congressmen. They use it to buy the corporate media. Remember, there was that Senate report. Israel spends millions and millions and millions of dollars bribing the corporate media to report the news the way Israel wants it reported, which generally means some variation of your kids are going to go get blown to bloody bits in another war on Israel's enemies. You have to fight back. And you do that by supporting financially the alternative media that isn't taking money from Israel, that isn't taking money from AIPAC. Over here, I mean, we're on AIPAC's does not get a Hanukkah card list every year. So we're the other side. We're the alternative, and we do need your support to keep on going. Now then, obviously, Super Tuesday has come and gone, and already there are cries of foul. Once again, videos that actually show the counting of the ballots show Ron Paul overwhelmingly ahead, and somehow magically by the next day, it's back to Romney and Santorum. Surprise is Dennis Kucinich lost his House seat in Ohio. And that may be sending a message to other members of Congress. You will, by golly, toe the line on the war party, or you will lose your job. All right, we're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome to the What Really Happened radio show. Join Mike on the air. Call toll-free 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I'm trading all kinds of messages with Dan the man over there in the control room. And he's upset because he wanted my Vendetta mask, but he didn't say anything before we put it up there for the bids today. So I'm sorry, Dan. You know, you're welcome to donate to RBN, but you don't get any special dispensations. I'm sorry. We'll have to find something else for you here from around the little movie memorabilia that we have. All righty, moving right along here. Now, if you woke up this morning worried about Al-Qaeda or the economy, or if you're in our part of the country, the flash flood, we've had a state of emergency here in Hawaii from all the rain and everything. Well, it turns out there is a new nemesis that threatens all of us. According to Benjamin Netanyahu, it is the nuclear duck. And we got this from this speech that he did to AIPAC, where he's up there trying to explain why, even though there is absolutely no evidence that Iran is building a nuclear weapon, that by golly, we've got to go and kill the nuclear duck. And so everybody's making fun of it. And by the way, when Netanyahu was up there making that speech, did you see his face? He can't stop smirking. He looks like a used car salesman. I can just see it in the back of his head. You know, he's thinking to himself, I can't believe I'm getting away with this. Bibi, you didn't get away with it. We know you're full of crap. So he's up there smirking and talking about, you know, the danger of the nuclear duck. And so we're all making fun about that whole situation. And remember, this is exactly the same stuff that Israel was saying when they bombed Iraq's civilian nuclear power station back in 1961. Turned out it was just a power station. Oh, well, is our face red. So they're going to go ahead and do it again. Meanwhile, Senator Levin, the Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman, Carl Levin, is saying that he believes an Israeli attack on Iran is very likely. Okay, fine. I don't have a problem with Israel attacking Iran if they're stupid enough to want to do it. The problem I have is that Israel is going to go provoke Iran. Iran is going to counterattack, and Israel is going to scream for the United States of America to send American kids and American weapons and American money to get them out of yet another mess. That I object to. I am 100% in agreement with Ron Paul. It's none of our business. If Israel wants to attack Iran, let them go do it. And if it goes badly against them, they're just going to have to deal with it themselves. Where was it ever written in stone, passed down from on high, that the United States of America is perpetually obligated to throw their children in between Israel and the bullets of everybody that Israel has ticked off? So, again, if Israel wants to attack Iran, let them. Let them. Go ahead. The problem is that's not what Israel wants. Israel wants to start the attack and then have the United States finish it up for them. Now, despite all the talk about backing off and re-engaging Iran in dialogue, I think that's a mask. Obama understands that preemptively starting a war is a vote loser for a war-weary people this November. They're still trying to figure out a way to make it look like somehow Iran is to blame for all of this thing. And so even as Obama's talking about re-engaging Iran in dialogue about their nuclear program, Netanyahu and Obama are pushing Panetta to expedite delivery of the bunker busters to Israel, some of which may be nuclear-tipped. Some of the bunker busters, in order to be able to guarantee that they're going to get the bunkers, they have tactical nuclear warheads. And so the U.S. is already spending your money to give weapons to Israel to attack Iran. On the basis of Israel's hallucination that Iran is a danger or a threat. And they aren't. Now, the reason I think that new talks with Iran are just for show is because inevitably the U.S. and Israel are going to say to Iran, you've got to stop making nuclear weapons. And Iran is going to say, we're not making any nuclear weapons. We're generating electricity to power our lights because we know sooner or later the Americans are going to steal all our oil. And so we need nuclear power to basically keep the lights running and the factories going. And the U.S. and Israel come back and say, we demand you stop making nuclear weapons. And Iran's going to say, we don't have any. We're not making any. Nobody's found any evidence that we're making any. And that's going to be the impasse. And the U.S. and Israel come back and say, Iran's being uncooperative. They refuse to stop making nuclear weapons. And it's going to be the same thing all over again. I think the only reason they backed off for the immediate future is because Obama knows this is going to wreck the election for him if they go into Iran now. But Bibi Netanyahu needs to go into Iran now or really soon, or he's going to have political troubles at home. So it's this very complex mishmash. But ultimately, they're trying to make it look like Iran has started this, or it's their fault, or it's all to blame on them. And it isn't. No more than it was Poland's fault when the Nazis marched in there. It was all a fake here. All right, we're going to take a phone call. We've got Frank in New York. Aloha, Frank. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, Michael, I agree with you 100%. You're absolutely right. We need to stop with these foreign entanglements. They are eating our treasury alive. We are losing highly trained combat troops.
They're destroying our children. I mean, you know, our kids are being blown to bloody bits in wars on the other side of the planet, and nobody can explain to us why.
Michael, you're absolutely right. And why is it our fear with Israel? I mean, I will ask you a question. When has Israel ever helped us in any of our conflicts? I mean, they weren't there in Vietnam. They weren't there in the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, Afghanistan. They never sent any combat troops to help us. It's always us giving them stuff. And it's,
you know, but they did send plenty of torturers to Abu Ghraib to help out, you know, getting the Iraqis to scream and say, yes, yes, we really did. You know, Saddam was secretly Jack the Ripper.
Michael, I love this radio station. Everybody on it talks a piece, you know, and this is what we need. We need to begin to understand what it is to be an American again, to mind our business, to let's get back to worrying about this country's problems. That's what's happening overseas in the Middle East and what's happening in Africa. No, let them work out their own problems. We have to work out our problems here in America, Mike. And you are absolutely right. We got to stop with this foreign entanglement. I mean, we were warned by Washington in his farewell address, but nobody wants to read it. Nobody wants to listen to it. We continue to go on with these wars and wars and wars, and you're right. The kids coming back with no arms, no legs, no eyes. For what? There's no interest in it in the American people. We have to begin to think like Americans again, not like this global international citizens like they're telling us we are. We're not. We're Americans. Let's worry about this country.
Yeah, we've lost the moral authority to tell other countries how to run their business because of the way that we're currently running ours. Our economy's a shambles. You know, they talk about globalism, you know, even the Navy's new motto, a global force for good. No, it isn't. It's a bunch of ships that are designed to blow crap up. And that's all it is. You know, it's out there to basically make very large holes in other people's cities. And that's all it's really there to do.
Mike, I don't even think we really need it. I mean, we have no real enemies. If we just minded our business, nobody would hate us. You know, we get involved in all these entanglements, and they turn around, and they begin to hate us because we're trying to tell them how to govern their affairs. You know, just think of our Civil War. The first 10 minutes of Gettysburg, more Americans died than in all the revolutions in Syria or Libya or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no country got involved. We worked out our own problems. And these countries got to do the same. We can't be the big brother anymore. We don't have the money, the resources. We have nothing. We are losing our manufacturing
base. We're not the big brother. We're the big looter. We're the big looter. And the core issue here is these private central banks issuing the public currency as a loan at interest, which we all understand creates a situation where you have more debt than the money necessary to pay that debt. And it can't reverse because every new bit of currency put into circulation starts as yet another interest-bearing loan from that private central bank. And so eventually a nation will reach a point where they have to launch a war of conquest to steal somebody else's wealth to square the books, to avoid from collapsing. And that's why I keep reminding people Before the creation of the Federal Reserve, there was no such thing as a world war. The two came as a package deal. Sooner or later, an economy that is using debt-based currencies reaches a stage where conquering their neighbors and stealing all their wealth is the only option they have left to balance the financial books. Or you can do what Iceland did and what Andrew Jackson did, and you can say, all right, we're getting rid of these private central bankers. Because, I mean, after all, it makes about as much sense to have bankers in charge of the nation's economy as it does to have drug addicts in charge of the health system. Sooner or later, everybody's trying to make do with nothing but placebos. And we need to have a political leadership with the courage to say, this experiment has failed. And it's not worth a third world war to remind us of why this private central bank model has failed.
Michael, you're absolutely right. Not only has it failed, it impoverishes the American people. We are the ones that suffer with the devaluation of our currency, which
That's
this...
Right.
You know, this, we are the victims of it most of all, and these countries are victims too, so we're all victims of the central bankers. We need to put it back under the Treasury and keep watch on it, because, you know, like I can't say enough, you know, the root of all evil is the love of money, and money brings out greed and everything else. You know, and once you put men in charge, you're going to see greed, corruption. You know, the printing presses ring up, and another war comes, and they completely lose the empathy gene or compassion gene in their DNA, and they just think about money.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I would like to, and we've got to take a break for commercials here in just a minute. Thank you for the phone call, Frank.
Thank you, Mike. I got to go.
Okay. I would rather edit, the root of all evil is the addiction to money. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And as I said before, I am not convinced that anybody has changed their mind about war with Iran. It may be delayed yet again because both leaders of Israel and the U.S. are dealing with their own particular political realities. Netanyahu needs the war now. Obama needs to put it off until after the November elections. And in a way, Obama is betting his second term that he's going to be able to prop up the economy somehow. He's not going to be able to make it look good, but he'll settle for just not seeing it deteriorate anymore, which means he's trying to find some way that Greece's impending collapse and the Eurozone fracturing doesn't actually affect Wall Street. Now, this may relate to some of those trillions of dollars of U.S. gold bearer bonds that are magically showing up in Europe under circumstances that allow them to just be confiscated or whatnot. But obviously, Obama seems to feel he's got the economic realities under control more than those of the war situation. So they're going to go back to the discussion tables, to the negotiating tables, and nothing will be accomplished because Iran cannot do that which is being demanded. It can't stop a program of building nuclear weapons that simply does not exist. It's the same impasse that we had with Iraq. So now the Obama's out there saying that the U.S. will not countenance an Iranian nuclear weapon. Okay. I understand why you don't want to do that. The U.S. has a pretty good nuclear monopoly, largest arsenal in the world. And there are only a few other nations with nuclear weapons, and you don't want them to spread anymore, because that way they might actually start breaking away from the control of the United States. That's why the U.S. actually only picks on countries that don't have weapons of mass destruction, like Iraq and Iran. But it occurs to me that if Obama wants to get in a huff about other countries' nuclear weapons, he really ought to be starting with Israel. We know Israel have those nuclear weapons. The U.S. officially denies it because that makes all the money they take from you to give to Israel a crime under U.S. law. But there's another issue at hand, and that is that when you go back and you look at incidents like the Levant affair, the attack on the USS Liberty, Israel's attack on the aid flotilla in international waters a couple of years back, Israel is murdering more Americans than Iran has. Why are we worried about a threat from Iran when the dead bodies of Americans are piling up around Israel's feet? Should we not be taking the position that the U.S. will not countenance Israeli nuclear weapons, especially because Israel has never signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, because Israel has never allowed IAEA inspections, because Israel was actually caught trying to sell a nuclear weapon to South Africa, which is the very activity the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty is supposed to prevent. So with Iran playing by all the rules, and Israel obviously not, with Iran not having a nuclear weapon, Israel having hundreds, with Iran not trying to export weapons technology to anybody, and Israel caught doing it with South Africa, and who knows who all else, why is the U.S. so totally focused on Iraq's and Iran's non-existent, mythical, hallucinated, made-up-from-thin-air nuclear weapons? If the President of the United States is really concerned about nuclear disarmament, let's disarm nations that actually have nuclear weapons but have not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Obama, you're looking in the wrong direction. Just like all those police officers in New York who are following the Muslims around, got to focus on the Muslims. We only see Muslims. Only Muslims can be the bad guys. And yet, the only people actually arrested near the World Trade Towers on 9/11 were Israelis, dancing and cheering and high-fiving and having a really good old time. Three of them were later exposed as Mossad agents. So why is the NYPD not following Mossad agents around this country instead of harassing the Muslims? Again, our government is just following right along Hitler's dictatorship for dummies. There's a targeted, designated religious minority on whom all the bad stuff is being blamed. Germany, it was the Jews. In the U.S., it's now the Muslims. It's the same mistake all over again. And they're going to lose, just like Nazi Germany did. Just as every nation that has started a major war since the beginning of the Industrial Age ultimately lost it. Now, meanwhile, over in Great Britain, Cameron is out there screaming that Iran is building nuclear missiles capable of hitting London. And a Death Star. They're building a Death Star. Honest, would I lie to you? I'm the Prime Minister. Which brings us back to remember when phony Tony Blair was insisting that Iraq could destroy Britain with only 45 minutes warning. In the words of former President Bush, fool me once, All right, we've got another caller in the on the line, Chris in Maine. Aloha, Chris, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, aloha, Mike. Oh.
I'm sorry, Chris. My mistake. Chris, my mistake. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what's really happened?
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And Chris in Maine, I apologize for our little misread of the clock there, but now we've got a lot of time for you to talk. What is on your mind today?
Well, how you doing there, Mike?
Doing fine.
Great. Listen, I was recently online. I came across something called Thrive. It's a movement started by a gentleman by the last name of Gamble, the same as Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you're familiar with it, if you've heard anything about it. I'd like to have thoughts on it. To me, it sounded very similar to Jock Fresco's resource-based economy idea. I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Well, my thoughts on it, I've had a lot of people who basically presented it, what really happened, and my feeling is it's a feel-good film, which you have to pay for, by the way, and they're talking about all these wonderful potentials for the future about, free energy or new energy sources and all the rest of it. And it's nice to want to believe in, and in that way, it's almost kind of being presented as a new religion, you know, that people can sort of feel like things are going to get better without having to do anything other than watch this movie and go along with whatever this Procter & Gamble program happens to be. And I think it's a way of trying to, like, propagandize the public to look for, you know, solutions if some far-off future date or some far-off future technology and land, instead of looking at the actual causes of the problems in our society, which is right in front of us right now. I noticed this Thrive movement was put together with, it's a big budget production, that movie. Somebody put a lot of money into this thing. And it came out just about the time we started to see the Occupy movement, and people began to really talk about how Wall Street destroyed the nation's economy with the biggest financial fraud in history. And people started saying, the cause of all of our problems are not Al-Qaeda, they're not the Illuminati, they're not, you know, Luke Skywalker's father or anything like that. It's the bankers right here in the middle of our town is the problem.
Right.
And the Thrive movement looks to me to be kind of a way of trying to refocus people into thinking that the cause of the problems and all the solutions are unreachably far away, so that they'll simply sit back down and live their lives without standing up and getting out the tar and feathers. That's my honest opinion of the Thrive movement.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking, but I like hearing your point of view. One other quick thing, I mentioned this to whoever was running the booth last week. I didn't stay online. My brother works for Bank of America up here in Maine.
Yes.
And the building where he works is just north of Bangor. And they're shutting down the end of October. Going to be letting go to over 200 people. I just thought
we're hearing
to find that.
Yeah, that is good information to have. We've been hearing from a lot of sources that Bank of America is in serious, serious trouble. They've been skyrocketing all of their fees. They're at some point, I expect they're going to go back to the United States government and say, we need another bailout. And everybody's going to say, why? What's going on? And that is really the bind that Wall Street and the banks find themselves in, because they're going back for all these trillions and trillions of dollars in taxpayer money, and the taxpayers are saying, what is the root cause of all of this? Where did all the money go? And nobody wants to answer that question, because Wall Street and the U.S. government are still trying to pretend that the mortgage-backed security fraud never actually happened. You'll notice they just sentenced Stanford for his little real estate fraud scheme, 65 years to 120 years, which is effectively a life sentence at the age that he's at. And they're making a big deal about, see, we're holding Wall Street to account. But Stanford, like Bernie Madoff, were convicted and sentenced for crimes that were completely unrelated to that whole mortgage-backed security fraud issue. We know that Tim Geithner went up to New York to basically put pressure on New York's attorney general to never investigate this one set of crimes. No prosecutions. The foreclosure settlement that Obama ramrodded through was a way of just papering it all over, because if the American people ever really came to understand the reason for the economic crash, they would turn on the bankers and they would turn on the government that helped the bankers cover it all up and loot the American people. And we should. We should do exactly what Iceland did.
I agree. 100%. 110%.
Yeah.
One other quick thing, if you could. I really enjoy the intro music you have that's taken from 16 Tons.
Yes.
Just wondering if you'd be putting that back on at any time.
Let's see. I'm not sure. It's not in the rotation now. I think it's over at wrhradio.com. There's a little link that leads to a player for all of the music we use on the show, and it may be there. And if it isn't, I'll make a point of putting it up there after the radio show today, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, you got it there. We're going to switch over to John in Washington. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, hello, Mike.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I'm going to be a little nervous. Forgive me, but I'll be brief. I wanted to get a new insight on the Obama birth certificate crud, the distraction. It is an insight that I have not read, and people have forgot it. You might like this. And that is that we forget, now you know this, I'm sure, but we forget that Obama is now the president of the United Nations Security Council. Correct?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, so as head of the United States, the leadership of the Security Council rotates through the member nations, and, you know, right now it's the U.S. turn.
Well, still, he is the president of the United Nations Security Council.
Yes.
And you know, okay, and then there's and Section 9, no title of nobility shall be granted, blah, 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 enrollment office, title of any kind of what from whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So he's already done that. And if you really think about this, all our orders
well,
right
wait
now,
a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Let's back up a little bit, and I'm not getting on your case, so relax, don't get nervous. But the titles of nobility, are you talking about the original 13th Amendment? Because by mutual consent within the federal government, that just doesn't exist any longer. The United Nations is not considered a foreign state. It is considered a transnational organization. And president of the UN Security Council doesn't quite carry the same weight that president of a sovereign state actually does. It's more of a formality. Obama can't go into the Security Council and start issuing orders. All he can really do functionally, or his delegate in this case, is bang the gavel. So I don't know what this would have to do with anything to do with the birth certificate, but I'll tell you in all honesty, and I know I see people trying to push this thing forward. The birth certificate is a distraction. And by the way, another website, 12160.com, which is another political website, they actually ran a poll. What do you think this whole birth certificate nonsense is about? And as of the last time I checked, The poll winner, the leading entry in the poll was my theory about Obama being a love child and this all just being a distraction and a ploy for the upcoming election. So I think people are kind of waking up to what's really going on. And again, if you go over to my little story about Obama the love child and you look at the photos of Barack Obama Sr., Barack Obama Jr. and Frank Marshall Davis, it's very, very obvious where the genetic material of the President of the United States came from. And under that theory, he is still a naturally born citizen, which is why McCain and Clinton didn't use this back in 2008 to get him out of the way.
And I am fine with your theory on that. I lean towards it myself, but I just got to the point that I just like going, what I'm seeing is United Nations taking over everything. They're doing the wars. They're changing laws in our own country. We've got Agenda 21. But you may not be the same as I do that the United Nations is pretty much taking over and that Obama is the president of the Security Council and that's what gives him the thing that he can do anything he wants because it's through the United Nations that we don't even have a president anymore. I don't even think we've had one for decades. But I think that's the thing where I look at who cares about a birth certificate even in total all, even though I agree with your theory more than any other one. I still think who cares because he's just going to do whatever he wants to do to the United Nations. And that
he's going to do whatever he wants to do until the American people stand up and say, stop. It really is that simple. Congress will do what they want until the American people say stop. Eric Holder's going to go on murdering American citizens without due process until we say stop. And now Holder is claiming that review of the files in secret now constitutes due process. No, it doesn't. They're just changing the words. But the reality is we're coming up to the point where the American people and indeed the people of the world do have to say stop. Now, as far as the United Nations taking over everything, we've been talking about that for a long time. We know that their foundation to promote global government was based on three pillars. One was the global warming situation, which obviously has not worked out. The global flu pandemic, which wasn't very pandemic at all, was going to be the other one. And the third one, of course, is the global economic collapse, for which they're going to recommend a global financial authority and a global private central bank, which is just more of the same problems. So they're not getting a lot of traction with any of that situation. But again, being president of the Security Council is an administrative position, and it doesn't have the authority that the president currently enjoys within the United States of America by virtue of generations of emergency acts and declarations. Because the way this country was set up, the president didn't actually have much authority in the U.S. government. His job was to carry out the orders of the Congress. After those orders by the Congress were approved by the judicial, then the president was given the job of actually making it happen. That's what they mean by the chief executive. And obviously our president has, over multiple administrations, has commandeered more authority to himself to a degree which is quite unconstitutional and very, very dangerous for the future of this country. But it hasn't happened at the United Nations yet. The key power person at the UN is the Secretary General. Not the president of the Security Council.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't you see a pattern going in that direction possibly then, though? It's like you said, we have...
Oh, there's no question there's a push toward globalism. I'm not saying that that's not happening. What I'm saying is that Obama's role within that may not be as significant as you seem to feel it is. He's definitely part of that agenda. But as far as he seeing himself as the eventual ruler of the world, well, I'm sure they all dream about it late at night. I'm not seeing that really, really happening. I think the United Nations doesn't even see the United States as a major player in the future government of the world. In fact, I think the UN's plan is ultimately for the United States to shatter and be balkanized.
You are right.
And, yeah.
You are right. And so, hey, thank you, Mike, but what you just said is true. They don't even care about the United States. I even think they're going to give up Israel. And when that happens, I don't know who we're going to start blaming. You know, maybe we'll find the true culprits one day. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
And thank you for letting me speak.
All right, you got it. Thanks a lot for the phone call. I do not think the United Nations will abandon Israel because Israel has subverted the United Nations to the same extent they've subverted the U.S. government, the British government, the German government, the French government, on and on and on and on. In fact, I am convinced that Bibi Netanyahu sees himself as ruler of the world, especially if they can get the dumb Americans and the dumb Russians to nuke each other off the face of the planet. That will leave Israel with their nuclear weapons, basically telling everybody else what to do. All righty. Now, moving on to the situation with Syria. The Obama administration is moving to increase military aid to the Syrian opposition. They're still using that word opposition like they're dealing with a legitimate public revolution against Assad's government, and yet they're continuously, the Syrian government is capturing all these foreign troops, French troops, American troops on the ground. Now it's basically come out that Mossad and Blackwater as a private intelligence agency and the CIA are leading the operations in Homs. They're involved in all that violence that's over there. It's all manufactured violence in order to justify a takeover of the place. One of the emails that came out from the Stratfor data dump basically involves an admission by the Pentagon that they planned to direct these terror attacks inside Syria in order to create the illusion of a popular violent uprising against President Bashar al-Assad. This has become the American standard means of operating. Go into a country with a bunch of money and a bunch of saboteurs and a bunch of agent provocateurs, create the illusion of a popular uprising, cause a lot of violence, then the U.S. says, oh, we must help the uprising. It's an expression of democracy against a tyrant. And then they overthrow the government and they put in another U.S. puppet. This is what they did back in 1953 in Iran. You had the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh. And he nationalized Iran's oil and said, if you want our oil, you will pay full market price for it. Well, this didn't sit well with either Britain or the United States of America. So the CIA goes in, they cause a lot of trouble, and they say, oh, there's a popular revolution against Mossadegh, and basically overthrow him. And they impose the Shah, who brought with him the Savak, and simply oppressed the people of Iran from 1953 to 1979, when the Iranian people said, we've had enough of this crud. And they kicked out the Shah, and they didn't like the United States from that point on, and one can hardly blame them. And the United States knows how to carry a grudge. They've been carrying one against Cuba for all these decades. And the U.S. government's attitude is, you do not throw out our imposed puppet rulers. You do not free yourselves from our covert control. That just is not allowed to stand. So the United States got Iraq to invade Iran to try and reconquer it that way. That didn't work out. Saddam lost that war. So now they're trying to basically find another way to go in there and re-enslave the Iranian people and get their oil for pennies on the dollar. And that's what it's really all about. It's like I said, the core issue for all of these problems, all this misery, is that model of a private central bank issuing a debt-based currency, which by design causes more debt than money. Doesn't matter how hard you work or how much you sacrifice, you cannot get out of debt. Until finally the nation reaches a point where conquest and invasion of other countries to loot their wealth is the only way to keep the scam moving forward. That's why I keep saying, and I'll keep on repeating this. Prior to the invention of the Federal Reserve System, there was no such thing as a world war. It is an artifact of this Ponzi scheme, this pyramid financial system. And as I told that other caller, it makes about as much sense to put bankers in charge of our national economy as it does to put drug addicts in charge of our medical system. After a while, anything of any real value or utility is in private pockets, and the nation is trying to get by with nothing but placebos. That's what a Federal Reserve note is. It's a placebo currency. So, anyway, now, interesting video has come out. You may have heard the name Syria Danny. This is one of these Syrian refugees, the poor people of Syria being abused, that CNN has kind of been waving around at everybody. Somebody leaked a video in which they show this Syria Danny and the producers of the video segments actually orchestrating when the gunfire is going to come in order to create the proper appearance that Syria is in turmoil and it needs the American people to come on in and save them from their evil elected government. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome to the What Really Happened radio show. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're almost to the top of hour number one. And a listener just sent in this story where apparently the European Union leaders, not having anything to worry about regarding their economy or anything like that, are looking at a stronger United Nations role to police the environment. This is kind of tying with what I was saying before about these three pillars on which the UN is trying to sell you the idea of a global government. And it's basically saying that European Union leaders could throw their weight behind a plan to convert the relatively powerless UN Environmental Program, UNEP, into a world body with the muscle to oversee treaties and protect the ecology. And it all sounds really well and good, but it is another way of ceding national sovereignty to the United Nations. And there are two problems with that. First of all, this is the same United Nations whose Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been caught lying and fudging data. They've been screaming about human-caused global warming. We're in the middle of our, what, fifth record-setting winter in a row. And so now IPCC is saying, forget all about that warming thing. We're worried about the acidification of the environment from carbon dioxide. In other words, they're guessing. And it's just a grab for your money and your power. And you just know that along with all of this ecology enforcement will come higher taxes and fewer freedoms. And for those of you who have not figured it out yet, I am opposed to the idea of a global government. I hold that national boundaries perform the same function for planet Earth that fireproof doors do for buildings and watertight bulkheads do for ships. Yes, you can open up those doors in the watertight bulkheads and leave them open, or you can prop open the fireproof doors in a building and things seem to move a little bit better. You can get around faster until you spring a leak or start a fire, and then you lose the entire ship or the entire building, or in this case, the entire planet. And I think Wall Street's mortgage-backed security fraud is a perfect example of this, because it was this whole global interlinked economy that took Wall Street's financial swindle and turned it into a worldwide economic disaster. Had there been limits on these financial transactions at the borders, the damage would have been contained only within the United States of America, and I certainly don't like living with that aftermath, and neither should you, but the rest of the world would not have been made to suffer for the crimes of Wall Street. Every time I think of global government, I'm reminded that's what Alexander the Great wanted. That's what Napoleon wanted. That's what Hitler wanted. And it's always wonderful for the people at the top of that global government who can stand, you know, on top of the temples built to their imperishable glory and scream, "I'm the king of the world." It's a heck of a party. But for everybody who is enslaved to that global New World Order, it's a real disaster. Everybody talks about the fall of Rome and the beginning of the Dark Ages. And yeah, there was a lot of religious abuse and everything like that. But you know what the fall of Rome meant for the people in the provinces? One less tax to pay. Hang on to that idea. We're going to take a break for station identification. We'll be right back.